right. As we can already see from how the morning went, we've got a lot of things that we can cover, but we're going to need to scope. And so I'm going to add a definition here to how the discussion is with bounded interaction. That bounded interaction is not just the bounded of the to the intellectual side of things, that it's also bounded within this room and our interactions now, that we're going to be on a really tight time constraint here. So the first thing we're going to do is select from the afternoon and what was the morning, what were leftovers from the morning, two topics, because we're starting late. We're going to give each topic 10 minutes only for discussion. It's all for discussion. And then the rest of the time will be on actual components of the architecture that we want in the architecture. So the components of the architecture that we want to recommend for an open ontology repository. And then the second part is the content that is actually used within the architecture itself. So let me introduce you to the two other topics, and then we can vote democratically and quickly on which two topics we will be continuing on. So slide 11, please. Are you there? Okay, great. So 5 and 6 were the two additional topics, defining and storing relationships, and so within the architecture, what are the constraints on the definitions, and how do we store relationships between ontologies? I'll show that. And then also mapping and ontology integration. So let's go to the next slide, 12, for the details of what was meant by defining and storing relationship. That is the mapping and integration within and across ontology repositories. So some of the sub-bullets were mapping required at what levels. Is the mapping required only between ontologies? So I wrote an ontology on emergency response, and there is another ontology on emergency response, and there we want to be able to do some mapping between them. Or the earlier example of the healthcare and the emergency response, and being able to do mappings between those. Or are we also doing mappings at a higher level, so that the data about that that we can have ontologies of ontologies and be able to discuss that and do mappings that allow us to basically create an ontology of the ontologies. The compatibility of the content across the ontologies. How is that going to be required? What constraint level would we put on that? And compatibility of, the way I put it, this was enumeration values for the meta tag, for the metadata, the tagging. So, for example, one being a quality metric, and if we had three different standards that had the term quality metric and we were going to be putting that over the ontologies, how do we do the mapping between these different enumerations, a 5-point scale versus a, you know, 3, etc. And then mappings, the maintenance of them, that is going to be a big nightmare for the management of the entire system. And so how can we best scale and scope this. The next slide, 13. Defining and storing relationships. There's tie here as well to the last one. But this one was specifically the architecture support for ties amongst the content of the repository. And so how do you, what do you allow to, I don't know, the difference between a relationship that you want to store and then allow queries on, and relationships that you support that somebody can go in and say, well, you know, these relationships are defined out there amongst these things, and I can go and ask for the relationships. So whether or not you're actually storing a structure of the relationships or you have to go query for that at each time is part of where this question goes. What's to be stored and what's to be available to applications to be able to get at that linkage? And what is the level of formalism that is required? One of the things that was noted that, the top line is that architecture support for the ties amongst the content of the repository automatically puts some boundaries and constraints on the way that you represent this. So,
I don't think I quite understand the distinction that you're making. Is this the difference between materialized and non-materialized relationships that I was
addressing? Relationships between ontologies.
Relationships, well, not necessarily between ontology. The other one here, the previous slide, 12, is the mappings between ontologies or the metadata, and then what do we want to do? What do we want to allow as far as mappings? The second one is more the architectural. Are we going to store the actual relationships and have those available as a structure that can be then used by other applications? And if those are combined, we can combine those.
So the relationships you're talking about here are relationships among ontologies in the repository. I'll just yell. The relationships you're talking here have a domain which is in a range which are the elements of the repository, i.e. the ontology you're storing.
The elements within the ontology repository. Correct.
That's the domain in the range.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a lot of meat in these two, but we did have some left over from this morning back on slide number 5. Whether or not we want to go into non-restrictive formatting of ontology or support applications. So we have two choices here. We can try and vote this out, or I can just pick two. Okay, I'm picking two.
Okay. You mentioned to the people on the phone that there's a new slide deck. So
absolutely. For the folks who are on the phone, we have a updated slide deck. There would have been two, but there were typos in my other one. So this assumes the one that was out there before. If you refresh the page, you should be able to download it and get this one. So unless somebody shouts out a strong feeling, I'm going to just pick two of these topics. Okay. I am going to pick the support of the support applications and the that's number 4 here. I'm sorry. You can't. I'm not controlling the number. Slide number 9, please. So the support, where the applications live, declaration of applications, openness of the applications. And then the second that I will pick from the afternoon is the defining and storing of relationships, which is slide number 13. And let's start with this one. So there was a question of clarification. If somebody, do we need clarification on what the specific topic is, Frank?
Are you referring specifically here to the mapping relationships or to any relationships?
Very good. Yes, this is defining storing relationships. I believe the discussion was the mapping relationships between. No, that was not true. It was any relationship. So it was the mapping relationships, and also this ontology is added to the repository, and it contains these other repositories and has modifications off of this other repository. So those are relationships that we want to be able to describe. So it's the relationships amongst the ontologies within the repository, which includes mapping. I think if I had a picture, it would probably have been clearer. It's the relationship amongst the ontologies. So example would be you have several ontologies that are all within the same domain. However, they have certain restrictions on them, and so you want to clarify that these two ontologies are related in some manner with a rule of except for. I'm not stating this very well.
Michelle.
Yeah.
And all. Now, I'm not sure I would tackle the relationship at this point, but considering it's up, that's a very complex issue. It's probably the key, the crux of one of the cruxes of the discourse. It's relationships are very, very complex, aren't they? I would say there are different kinds of relationships, aren't there? Should we define them, distinguish them between objects? And not, for example, there is a relationship of an object can have a relationship to objects at the same level of the hierarchy, but also with other levels of the hierarchy. So understanding what relationships are and defining them then can help us to start working out a model for how we want to sort them. But unless we be able to define them, which is your first point, I'm not sure I know how to go about it, but I would say, shall we try to identify, and I don't know whether we should do it here, the distinctions between different kinds of relationships to start with?
I think on the architecture side, where we wanted to get to was, what relationships do you store as additional data in the repository versus what relationships do you support for somebody who can query? And I think maybe we should narrow the focus, and this might help with the definition, of the relationships that need to be stored in the repository itself.
So Michael Gruninger, so just to maybe give you some examples, and then you can tell us if this is what you're thinking of. Okay, so one example would be, there is a set of time ontologies that have been put together. They're written in KIF, common logic, so first order logic kinds of ontologies. There's also an ontology called OWL Time, which is a weaker version of it, right? It's because you can't say everything you can say in the first order ontologies you can in OWL Time. Even though OWL Time was extracted from those first set of time ontologies. Mm-hmm. So there'd be that kind of a relationship. It's not quite a version. It's almost like an implementation, two different implementations of the same concepts, but one language just can't, say what the other one could. Right. So there's that kind of relationship. Is that kind of what you're thinking of?
Yes, that would be one relationship that needs to be, in my opinion, needs to be maintained within the architecture. It needs to be supported by the architecture, but not only supported as in a query can be made, but actually that we do a graph or some sort of representation of the relationships amongst the content in the repository.
Okay. So, and here's another example. So you have a lot of ontologies are say, modular. So there might be a single ontology, but it actually consists of maybe 10 smaller sub-theories, sub-ontologies. And you could either take all 10 all at once, or you could take a small subset of those and reuse it for a different kind of a problem. So there'd be these different kinds of modularity relationships, the relationships between, like, import kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be another example.
That would be another example.
Okay.
And going one step further on that would be if you had the 10 and you had an ontology that included those 10, you had a second ontology that had a relationship with the first ontology of its own, but only used 6 of those,
right.
Then you would probably want a relationship structure that shows the containment of the inclusion portion of that. And the question is that valuable to store? And, you know, where it belongs in the architecture.
And how about, Leo Oberst, how about versions?
Yes, versions are a very, very strong relationship that has come up a number of times. And the relationship is not only one between the version and the next version, but it's on the metadata over each of those ontologies. This was brought up during one of the panel discussions, that the metadata over one particular version of the ontology may actually be different than the metadata on the updated one. So should there be 2 separate metadata portions for each of those ontologies and a relationship between them, and then a tie between that? So what relationships need to be stored in the system to support use of the system.
Let me ask you a question.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize.
So we are not thinking to store the content of ontologies and the relationships between, you know, classes, concepts that ontology has?
Oh, of course. The point is we've got an open ontology repository, so each ontology itself has those relationships stored. So do we put an ontology over the top of everything?
No, so my question, if the answer was yes, then so there are relations that could be stored, supported, but also some of them that could be inferred. And that's when this gets complicated, because if you want to create the whole graph with a bunch of ontologies that are there, that you can get them via service-oriented architectures and whatever, you need to construct the big graph in one place to be able to query it.
Mm-hmm.
So point that we maybe need infer relationships.
So the inferred relationships would, by centralizing and storing those, I think we would be speeding up some of the query process. Does this also go across federated?
I'm just putting there a question, because I don't know if federated is an easy way to go harvest all the ontologies that they have, put it in the graph. What happens if they change? How do you
mm-hmm.
update your relationships, your inferences, etc.? So, yeah.
Yes, thank you. So what I've done is I've basically just thrown a monkey wrench at you for the architecture. And if we could continue discussing it as far as the relationships, that would be good.
So one clarification from me, and that is...
Microphone.
Ravi Sharma here. Just one clarification. At the minimum level, we have some metadata stored in the repository at the very base level that Michelle talked about this morning and early in the afternoon relating to structure, etc. How do we know that set of metadata in repository will actually lead to the same kind of functionality that an external representation of that ontology in an application maintains? So some amount of validation within one ontology itself is required. Then next are the layers that we've been discussing in this thread. Thank you.
What I think I've heard everyone argue for by going... What I think I've heard everyone argue for, essentially, is we do need an ontology of ontologies to meet some of these requirements of being able to define the additional relationships at this higher level. And trying to circumvent that will just be shooting ourselves in the foot many times.
I was just going to reiterate one of the points that another guy made. I don't remember his name. The question, how do we, which relationships do we store, comes to mind a possible other question, which is, how do we capture the relationships? As a user, I would like to be able to have all the relationships represented and accessible, so that when I need to find a relationship, I just query the system to do so. So before I ask myself a question, which one do I store, I said, which one are there? And how are they identified and represented, and how do they exist, in what form?
Okay. That would be, I think that's a very good point. Actually, could we go back one slide? And this may be easier with the 12. I think this gets to Paola's point that the mappings, when they're in there, they're required at the different levels, but that we have to have some method for storing that across the repositories. Is that okay? So one question is, where do we store this? Is this, has, now you get back to that concept of a centralized ontology of ontologies is what you're looking at. Is it feasible to do a federated ontology of ontologies? I believe it is. But who has the jurisdiction over each of those portions, and how within the architecture can we constrain that? I'm wondering if I've dug down too technical. Steve, Peter, Leo?
What can you extract?
What I can extract from the audience response, the social interaction, is confusion. But
Jim Disbro. When we're talking about relationships, you know, what does the word mean? You know, when you've got a relationship, someone is doing something to someone or something. And this first term could be called a relator term. Well, relator terms were, there's actually a standard on them at the Library of Congress, and it was developed maybe 50, 60 years ago. And this is because they were addressing the exact same issue and the same problem of how do you define these things. Now, and they also have you squish out the vowels and you have a 3 or 4 character representation of this relator term, because it covers both the relator and the relationship of what's being done. The operator could be called a predicate, could be called a verb, could be called a bunch of them. And the object is pretty much the same thing. And when you structure everything that you're talking in terms of relationships in some kind of structure of that sort, you're addressing it in an architectural way, which is systematic. Each ontology or sub-ontology, can be defining its own relator terms, and you can have them all searchable in the same fashion. And in terms of function, the term itself, the 3 or 4 characters, can be used across the board, going both across. And when you're talking relationships, you also have processes. And processes are a special kind of relationship where it's, I think, supply chain management, where you have distinct pieces, where you have a stopping point. You have a relationship where something is done to something, and then it stops. And then you have another relator, another relationship, and you work your way through the supply chain. So there is a structure and architecture that could be applied to that. Within ET.gov, we have one component that's been registered that is actually dealing with it. And it's under a part of it which is dealing with the measurements component. But this piece within the measurements is called the short file. It stands for Semantic Heuristic Ontological Relator Terms. And it's an architectural concept that, mm-hmm. if applied systematically across all these, would allow you to do the things like what Paolo was talking about.
Thank you. See. Okay. I think that's a good summary of Leo.
I think this is Leo Oberst. I think what that points out is that really on top of this is a process model or set of process models, workflow, if you will, for the kinds of services that get done. So essentially, even if individual ontology owners or developers are responsible for their own relationships to other ontologies, that's part of a larger workflow or process model that has to, you know, be what the repository itself is intending to be. So if you just add relationships to your ontology from your ontology to another ontology because you have those services in the ontology registry, behind that, that may be just the first stage in the workflow or process model of one of the services that the registry supports.
Thank you. Okay, I think what I'd like to do is go to the other topic and give it a little bit of time. There were some good points, I think, captured here. I would hope that maybe we can also continue with some of that in some of the other sessions or as we talk about what part actually goes into communicate tomorrow. So the other, let's see what slide, is the content. Thank you. Slide 6. Oh, point 6. No. Back. There we go. So support of support applications, because the last part of our time, the last 15 minutes or so, I want to get at what are the pieces of the architecture, the components within it that we want to have as a modular form, but that can be interchanged and will do support for applications, will do support within the repository, the functionality that is required by the architecture. So here, this is support of supporting applications. How does the architecture support this? For example, if we have repositories and we need to get at the different content, the ontologies within it, and we need to get at the metadata about those ontologies, do we have a common API across those? And is there a representative form that would be best for that? Where do those applications live, the support applications? Are they part of the repository architecture itself, or are they is it completely service-oriented? So third-party members can provide the applications, and within the architecture there is a place to hold a registry of services over the ontology repository. So comments on this. This is taking the service-oriented architecture approach is I think, where the thread was going, and saying that we're going to want applications from lots of different sources. We're going to want reasoning engines over this. We're going to want search engines over this. We're going to want things that can look at the different ontologies and make other inferences on that. We're going to want to pull together the content. So how do we support those? Using a service-oriented architecture and a specific API that we have to be very clear and defined is the approach that is right now recommended.
Hi, Debbie McPherson. Can you go back to jurisdictions again and explain to me what you mean by that? Jurisdictions, when you said, like, who's going to have jurisdiction over this? Can you explain a little bit more what you mean?
Who would have jurisdiction over the, if we have an ontology of ontologies, and we have a federated system, so we want to map into the ontologies that are held by other groups or associations, who holds that part of the map? Do you have an ontology of ontology at every site, and then you have some common area where you can do the federation, or do we, that would be a centralized add-on? Someone mentioned earlier, what about the hybrid approach, which is really what this is?
Well, I guess the earlier there was a comment about, well, you can only get so far without getting tied to the real world. And, like, if you look at federal jurisdiction has certain controls, and then you get to the states, and they're the ones who are really licensing the lawyers and architects and stuff. You know, don't you think that there could be some multi-level kind of thing like that?
Yes, absolutely. And at that multi-level, then what happens when Delaware says that this is the way that we define the hospital and the services that are in the hospital, and then you have a neighboring state that defines it slightly differently. And so they have put over all of their ontologies within there, in Delaware, a mapping, and the other one has put a mapping over it, but the way they did the mapping is slightly different because it's within their jurisdiction. How do we draw those together?
Right, or, but if they want federal money, then they're both going to have to comply with something else, right? Yeah.
Can I say a couple of things? About the jurisdiction point, in an open environment, there is, I'm not sure, I mean, not just about the jurisdiction, but about a lot of other things that we are discussing here. I think the premise is that we come from a world where we are used to define the boundaries, which is what ontology is about, in a way. But in open environments, I'm not sure whether such jurisdictions will hold. And even if we do manage to make them hold, they will be artificial in the sense that they will not be natural. Otherwise, they will not hold forever. They will be in constant dynamics. So I just wanted to say that about jurisdiction. I'm not sure how far you can constrain to a jurisdiction without having it applying a limit that, in a way, is what the open ontology concept or even the open ontology repository concept maybe is trying to transcend, in a way. And I wanted to say something else, but I don't remember it. I'll say it later.
All right. Well, I think we best move on to the... did you have... Or
This is Mike Gaines from BBN. I had a comment about the tools that I think there's going to be different degrees of coupling that are required for tools. So some tools, I think, are basically going to need to be essentially run within the repository execution environment itself just to get the performance they need for search and so forth. There's probably other tools that are more batch-oriented that could basically be accessed remotely. And my suggestion basically is a modular interface basically that encapsulates either the tool directly or the remote access of the client stuff for the tool.
Yes.
So this is Evan. I think that there's going to be at least three classes of tools that relate to these kinds of things. There's the class of tool that you can already use simply by using the standard interfaces like editors and reasoners. There is a class of tool which may kind of overlap with that, which is the ones that you might want in a workflow to capture metadata as people are registering their ontology content. Like you might want to capture whether or not this is validated or what kind of expressivity it has or those kinds of things. And then the third are those kinds of things that you want to have tightly integrated with the repository, and that's like querying tools. So it seems to me there's very different relationships to applications that apply here.
There's a question from a person on the phone whose area code is 703. So if you hit star 3 and unmute yourself, then go ahead. Person from 703 area code.
Hi, this is John Cabral.
Go ahead. We can hear you.
Well, actually, this point came up earlier, but I think it's still relevant here, is that if we have an ontology of ontologies, but there's still the assumption that the different contributors to the registry/repository will be able to use their own language, then we're sort of introducing a confusion. Presumably, the overarching ontology is going to have to be written in a single language, and the applications that would support it are going to have to be able to support the constructs in that application. I'm sorry, in that language. And so this sort of seems to, I don't know, it seems to generate a problem because there's, on the one hand, I support the idea of there being a large amount of freedom in how people choose to represent how to formalize the ontologies, you know, whether it's RDF, OWL, or first-order language. But this sort of seems to introduce certain restrictions because in order for them all to play together, there's going to have to be some type of common language for them all to work in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. I think what I'd like to do is go on, and if we can just start with a capture, anything that from the requirements. I was going to start with a blank sheet, and that's probably not ideal. So instead, I am going to attempt to pull up.
You want to project there?
What I would like to project is the list of requirements that was it Evan who or Todd. It was Todd.
I think it's on your page, right?
Yes.
I'll let you do it. I'll just plug the projector into your machine.
All right.
Yeah, she's online.
These are the old ones.
Okay, so you're plugged in when you do the,
So what I want to get to is big internet lag.
You sure you're still connected?
Yeah, I am. Okay.
Start in here, maybe Todd can recall and start reading some of them.
We're almost there.
I can recall some of
them. Well, it's easier if we have the list in front of us as far as.
Sure. 9 more minutes.
Okay. Let's. Ravi, it's under requirements high level.
Oh, recent changes, you can find it from recent changes.
Well, while there's a quick lull, there may be a question of why is this term I was talking about inside the component of measurements? It has to do with semantic distance because you have a certain distance between different relator terms and between the different operations. And so when you're talking about measurements within this semantic space, there are semantic distances, and that's why it's within the measurement component. Yes, the distance between related concepts would be less than ones that are further apart.
All right, we can close the other window either.
Okay.
But we need to do the text size trigger.
Yeah, and where does it start, Robbie? Right here. Okay. There, yeah, okay.
Do people see that?
Let me see if we this will support. That's not where we want to be. I'm going the wrong way. Yeah, that is how I feel, right? Okay. We went through this morning the assumptions. I'm going to let those stand, and we'll go on to some of the other requirements of the repository. And what I'd like is to have people comment on and add to or, you know, this list for the requirements. So let's take the section, the general one, that it should be scalable. I don't think we probably need to discuss that. Distributed, we already mentioned that we were going with a federated approach, and the repository shall be sufficiently detailed and platform independent to allow multiple implementations. And that's one of the goals of, that's the difference between the goal of this session and of a implementation group, is that we're trying to put the requirements together for a definition that an architecture must support in order to be a sufficient open ontology repository. It shall be capable of supporting ontologies in languages that have reasoners. Now, that doesn't preclude us from having ontologies in there that cannot be reasoned over using a specific methodology. It does allow for those to work on the ontologies that it is designed to handle. And that is another one of the tags that had been discussed as far as a metadata tagging for that ontology. What reasoners or what type of reasoning engines is it designed for immediate support? Distributed hierarchical structure is not required, and that's the kind of the crux of the federation approach, is that we're not talking about that each level would necessarily have sublevels underneath, that this is potentially I'm taking pieces from an ontology in part of the repository that's held by one company and parts from another agency, and I'm bringing those together. So it's not going to stay hierarchical. Now, this one may be a point that anyone wants to comment on. Is not having it hierarchical makes it maintenance in the architecture more difficult?
The way I intend hierarchy, I intend it as a structure. Because you can also have flat hierarchies. That doesn't mean that there is no hierarchy, but it's a hierarchy of a certain kind. So I'm not sure whether not hierarchical is the appropriate way of describing what we're aiming for. And I wonder whether we need to express a bit better what are we aiming for in, as non-hierarchical. What do we mean exactly? It's lacking fixed relationships, I guess, as opposed to lacking relationships. Right?
Lacking a direct parent-child relationship, that it does not have to be in the linkage of all ontologies within the repository, don't have to have a hierarchical structure to their interconnection. The things that we want to be able to support as core functions within the architecture, I mentioned earlier that we needed to be able to we need to be able to search, we need to be able to bring in the ontologies, and when we need to be able to deal with them. What were my three terms? But basically, we need to be able to interoperate with those. So one thing that we need to be able to do is discovery. We need that metadata to support the search capabilities, the governance process, and the management. Within that, the discovery mechanism, the minimal set that we were talking about, is discovered by what domain is it in, the author-creator source, the version of it, the usage for it, the language that it's encoded in, the terminology and a quality metric. Now, are there other aspects which you think are core for discovery?
Well, I have a question. Terminology doesn't seem to fit with these other things. I don't really understand what the thinking was there, including it.
Todd, can you clarify? You can probably do this better than I can.
Well, I tried to summarize what I've been hearing over the various discussions of the several weeks, but in particular, I believe there's some communities that already have terminology out there that you can make reference to, whether it's ISO or W3C or something like that. I was being slightly vague here because I didn't know myself for sure, but I'd heard this notion bandied about, and I wanted to include it.
I think one example, is the people familiar with NIMS, the National Incident Management System, our standard. I've heard it both ways. Standard. Within that, there are structures that of definition. There's also within the Department of Justice, there is a terminology set that's pretty much set. So that we need to be able to do discovery across terminology, perhaps with the namespace. Over there, and then I'll come to Leo.
And also the mapping relationships, if we are storing, don't we want to discover through those relationships?
I think that's very discovery over the mapping relationships. Oh, I can't take notes on this one. can you note that for me, Leo, would you please? Or,
just hand me a piece of paper and I'll...
So to clarify for the terminology bit, we're talking about a terminology that you would use for the search, a particular terminology that...
Correct.
That you would expect would be helpful.
So you would say, perhaps here's the namespace for the terminology that is used, and you could then have any relations within it. Leo?
Yeah. So I think we need to distinguish between terminology and ontologies, just like controlled vocabularies. These are they're all resources that we need, but the terms are more like words and phrases that particular communities use to index the ontologies. So, for example, you may have your own vocabulary, and it really points to a node called automobile. How you reference the things that mean the same is going to be a function of your vocabulary. So we want to have multiple vocabularies, controlled vocabularies, assuming we want them controlled. But those will ultimately also, over time, index what we're calling ontologies.
Yes, thank you for the clarification. Other on this list? Yes.
Dr. Holmes, presuming we have this upper ontology or our mapping ontology that's over the top, don't you want to have inference in there too? So these are just sort of standard Google type keyword things, and we tend to be a little more exotic than that. But I think there's a useful add inference.
So discovery based on inference, you want a discovery mechanism that supports discovery by inferencing.
I do.
I'm sorry?
Inference.
Well, by inferencing. If we just say it that way, then it's generic. Is that a core feature in people's mind? I'm getting a very adamant nod from one person.
I think so.
All right. Other?
Yes.
Oh.
I think that if anyone should really, or any group should really exploit the power of ontologies in terms of inferencing and descriptors, it should be this one.
It should be
this one. I mean, I think it should be. So that, for example, not just terms and synonyms, but if I put in a bunch of descriptors of what a table is really about, I'd really like to come out with a table at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Without having to name it or name all the synonyms for it, for example. So there's some real power there that we should really exploit.
Okay. Yes.
Relatedly, I think perhaps a critical thing in the supporting of inference without trying to build inference features into the repository in a single way is simply sufficient means to capture inference-related assumptions. So, for example, being able to indicate that a particular ontology is assumes a closed world, for example. Mm-hmm. This sort of metadata would be a highly would be essential if to facilitate the inference use.
My name is Doug Clark. Has very little to do with the ontologies per se, but in just listening to what's going around all the tables is when you go, a question, who's going to write some of this stuff and how are you going to do it unambiguously? Much of the language that we're talking about is ambiguous language. And if I'm really going to do something here to satisfy what you're asking for, it needs to be unambiguous, or else you're going to get a plethora of things, and then nobody's going to agree with what it ought to be or what it should be. So who's sitting down and looking at the issues from this, from the standpoint of, I do want to produce something, and the only way to get that is to make these things unambiguous, and I don't think you can apply mathematics, which would be very nice if I could do it that way. I've got to do it through language, and the language here is all over the place.
I would agree with that, and I would say that who should do that is us, and that although the summit officially face-to-face is done today, that work needs to continue.
May I say something? I meant to write this down to at least foment some discussion to focus it, because as you point out, you can't build diddly from this. These are, I explicitly said, these are high-level requirements.
High-level.
And from these, you then have to drill down the standards requirements analysis process. How are you going to do some of these things? What does it mean to be usage? And we just heard another implication about usage in terms of whether they have transitive closure or not, and other things. But I wanted to foment a focus, and I think I did that.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, Ravi. Here.
This is Joe Collins, Naval Research Lab. To the ambiguity issue, if there is not a single core interchange ontology, then which would require then two translations to go from one ontology to another, with ambiguity, those two translations are going to make things doubly ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I'm not sure that that's really feasible to have that interlanguage or interontology, which would then imply an n squared number of translations required, which is not scalable. So there is a countervailing problem there.
Mm-hmm. And I know we're on time. Robbie's been helping with timekeeping as well.
Yes.
So.
And last comment from me is there is a process that we all know who work with UML and other notations that we go from requirements to use cases to modeling, even though Frank did not cover them too much this morning. And so that process, such as that, is available to us to formally describe later as we mature. In the meantime, Peter, I think the OOR forum is the one that will take on the task of possibly creating instances of the repository. So these all inputs would go in that direction. It's not just directionless.
Well, and that is one, you know, this is the generalized conversation, and that is one output. I'm going to, because we've got to get on the schedule here, I'm already over time, I'm going to just skip to the last two items on governance, and then what I really hope is that maybe you can spend some time with the page, even though it's not well formatted at this point, the content is there, and continue the dialogue. There will be a writing on of the communique session section for the repository architecture, and so tomorrow we will be going over that, some of the things that we've brought together here, and what I'd kind of hope to get at this afternoon. I apologize for a little bit off-center after lunch today, is that we get back on center and that we'll have that in the communique, and so we can try and get something solid to move forward on. So I'd just like to mention the last two ones here on governance, because I think they address some of the things that people have said. The repository shall provide explicit machine-usable, accessible repository semantics. So this is requiring some formalism, some structure, that doesn't, now notice it's the repository shall provide explicit machine-usable, accessible repository semantics. To me, that does not necessarily preclude us from having, as someone said, just a WordNet as a ontology content within the repository. It's the repository architecture itself that shall supply this capability. And the repository shall provide a mechanism to avoid intellectual property and related legal issue problems. And I think that addresses something that was brought up earlier. So this is a mechanism to have a gatekeeping on the IP issues and making sure that we aren't getting into non-open territory, shall we say, that for the scope of this symposium, this summit, and the efforts that go forth from this symposium summit is that it be open and that we're not dealing in the intellectual property space or legal issues. So any comments on those, and then we're going to have to wrap. Oh, I'm getting the signal that, okay, you've got the...
One of the nice curiosities of this open short file is that because it comes out of the government, I work for the government, it cannot be copyrighted, it cannot be considered intellectual property by any company, and it isn't even constrained by the standard kinds of general licenses that would constrain it. It is truly open, and just it's the nature of the beast when something comes out of the government as an idea.
And it's also going to be the nature of the beast for our group. And with that, we're going to have to wrap up. And the next chance to really focus on the architecture piece of this will be when we discuss the communique section tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Very difficult standing up here trying to herd all this together, but I have a slight process change. Because our cafeteria across the hall closes at 3 o'clock, I recommend we break now for, let's say, hopefully 20-25 minutes, and then we'll pick up on the quality gatekeeping session by Fabian and Barry Smith. We're going to run that one at let's say 3:05, see if we can keep it reasonably on time. Okay, secondly, as I had warned you all, I'm asked to get signatures from everyone for recording this session, so during the break I'll start passing this little name and signature page, which I then hand to our audiovisual folks, if you wouldn't mind. Okay, so let's reconvene at 2:55. Thanks.